In about 2 months, the state's eviction moratorium law is set to expire, which will likely prompt a new round of discussions about the right balance of protections that should be provided to tenants in New York who are at risk of losing their housing. In advance of this deadline, and in light of a recent lawsuit filed in state court in Erie County challenging the law, we're checking in once again with Ellen Davidson, a staff attorney with the Legal Aid Society, which has supported the implementation of eviction moratoriums in New York throughout the pandemic. It's great to have you back with us, Ellen.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we touch on the lawsuit that's looking to invalidate the eviction moratorium law, can you talk about the administration of the protections, at least the latest round, since they took effect at the end of the summer? For instance, have New Yorkers been able to actually avoid eviction, and have they been able to stay in their homes?
Many of them have. The moratorium that we have in New York requires a tenant to ask for the protections by filing a hardship declaration. That hardship declaration says either I've had financial difficulties, I can't pay my rent because either I've had loss of income or a significant increase in costs that have due to COVID. Or there's a section on hardship declaration where if you are over 65, or you or a family member are particularly susceptible to COVID-19, you can check off that moving would put you or your or someone in your household's life at risk.
But there have been some evictions still, or there have been some eviction proceedings that are at least underway?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are people who haven't put in the hardship declaration, and their cases are moving forward. There are also exceptions to the hardship declaration. So if a landlord accuses the tenant of creating a nuisance or damaging the property, the landlord can move forward with an eviction case. In August, the Supreme Court invalidated our first eviction moratorium law. Mm-hmm. In that case, the landlord couldn't challenge the hardship declaration. And the Supreme Court found that the landlord's inability to challenge the hardship declaration violated due process. And so in the second law, the one that was put into place in the beginning of September, if a landlord has a good faith basis to believe that the tenant hasn't faced a hardship, the landlord can challenge the hardship. And if the tenant can't prove hardship, then the case moves forward.
Glad you bring up the issue of the hardship declaration and the mechanism that exists now, because there's a group of landlords out in Western New York who have brought a lawsuit basically arguing that the hardship declaration, the process that exists in the law, is not built for the real world. They argue that the burden is too high on them, but it sounds like from your description that the burden of proof is on the tenant and not necessarily the landlord to prove that you are suffering and need this protection. So what do you think of the lawsuit that's been brought? Is it a misinterpretation of the law? Do landlords have enough tools at their disposal as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, and they're using them every day. We see landlords who are challenging hardship declarations daily. In New York City, at least, the landlord does have to make a motion, but I understand outside of New York City, a landlord's attorney who says, I think that their hardship should be challenged, mm-hmm. The courts are setting down hearings just based on that. So I think in this case, I read the papers. And it doesn't seem as if any of the landlords who brought the case have even tried to challenge the hardship declaration. We see landlords say, I see the person, or my property manager sees the person leave their apartment to go to a job every day and, on a daily basis. So I don't think this person has lost their job. We've seen landlords put in hardship declarations based on social media. I've seen pictures of my tenant out for dinner. We've seen people put in hardship declarations saying, I know my tenant received assistance for either through public assistance or through Section 8, so they can't possibly have had a financial hardship. And we've seen landlords simply say, I don't think my tenant applied for rent assistance, and therefore they clearly don't have a hardship. It doesn't take a lot to get the hearing. And then once you have the hearing, we've seen pretty invasive subpoenas signed by courts requiring tenants to provide lots of documentation. And we've seen court cases which say that once the landlord makes that case, that there's a good faith basis to believe there wasn't a hardship, the burden shifts to the tenant to prove the hardship.
Is that appropriate?
Yes, that's exactly how the law was designed to work. And that's why that when landlords use the process, they get to challenge the tenant's hardship. And either the tenant proves they had a hardship or they don't.
Putting aside the moral and ethical questions about evicting people in general and thinking about eviction solely through the lens of the pandemic that we're in now and the risk to public health that can be caused by evictions, do you think New York still needs an eviction moratorium?
At this very moment, yes.
How come?
I think we're starting to see the case rates climb up. And, you know, evidence comes in every day that shows that having an eviction moratorium saves lives. You know, today we learned that New Yorkers are now eligible for the booster shot, which is going to just make us safer. But we're still seeing infection rates come back up, and we're still seeing people become sick.
And I don't mean to sound callous when I say this, but at this point in the pandemic, with vaccination rates where they are, with treatment advanced to where it is, do evictions pose a threat, though, to public health more broadly, or are they a threat to the person who's being evicted? People who, I would guess, normally face worse health outcomes just in general from being evicted.
Well, if the courts reopen to their pre-pandemic crowds, you know, every time we have places where huge numbers of people gather indoors, you see case rates move up. Even, you know, we see breakthrough infections, and we are not, unfortunately, at the vaccination rate we need to be in New York State to have herd immunity. I know that in New York City, for example, we have arraignments in criminal courts happening on a daily basis. At the Legal Aid Society, we appear in person for those arraignments, and almost on a daily basis, at my job, we get notices of people who have tested positive, people who have fallen ill with COVID because arraignments are happening in person.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the state's eviction moratorium, and our guest is Ellen Davidson, a staff attorney with the Legal Aid Society, which has supported the implementation of eviction moratoriums in New York. So fast forwarding to January 15th, what do you think should happen then?
It is my prediction that that will be the end of the eviction moratorium. I think that the courts will start to see more and more people receiving notices of eviction, and tenants trying to stop the evictions from moving forward. I'm really hoping the courts have taken this time to figure out how to keep people safe. But I don't see any indication that the state and the legislators will extend the eviction moratorium further than January 15th. At Legal Aid, we're doing everything possible to end as many of our cases as possible using the money that our clients have received through the state ERAP program, and then paying off the rest of the arrears through the Department of Social Services or charities. But we're trying to lower the case rates as quickly as possible so that when the moratorium has ended, there'll be fewer and fewer cases in court.
Why do you think the moratorium won't be extended past January 15th?
It's one of the longest, strongest moratoriums in the country. And I think the fact that we were able to extend it last time happened because of two unexpected events. One was the Supreme Court's actions, and the second was a new governor. And I just, unless, you know, something completely unexpected happens before January 15th, all indications that we have is that the moratorium will end.
Do you anticipate, or would you be supportive, in light of the dynamic you're talking about, some sort of compromise moratorium, something maybe that doesn't have the teeth that we have now, or is more narrowly focused in order to ensure that more tenants can stay in their homes than otherwise might?
Always. I always support anything that provides more protections for tenants. Yes, absolutely would support.
Are there any discussions to that end going on right now, either among advocates or Democratic lawmakers in the majorities?
Not that I've heard of.
Well, as part of this conversation about evictions, we have to consider the state's campaign to distribute a couple billions of dollars in back rent payments to landlords. Where does that initiative stand now as we talk on Monday, November 15th?
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked a number of times about this program. It was very slow to get off the ground. At this point, the state has said that they have either dispersed, meaning the money has gotten into the hands of the landlords, or they have obligated their entire federal funds. So that's about $2.2 billion. They've paid out to landlords over $1 billion. There's an additional sum of money, which is like $1.09 billion, where tenants have been found eligible for the program. They have not paid out the landlords, and there are, I think, three main reasons why landlords haven't been paid out for this sum of money. In some cases, the tenants didn't have good contact information for their landlords, so that the agency wasn't able to contact the landlord. In some cases, the landlord has applied for the money, and the tenant applied for the money, but the agency had difficulty linking the application. And there's a third group of landlords who don't want to cooperate with the program. The tenants in that category are still protected, will be protected, and the landlords will have 6 months to decide to accept the payments. But even if they ultimately decide not to accept the payments, their tenants will be protected, and the landlords can't go after the tenants for that amount of money.
Is there a likely potential of additional funding coming to New York from the federal government, or state lawmakers and Governor Kathy Hochul deciding to put additional state resources into this initiative?
Yeah, there's a mechanism within the federal law that allows the Treasury Department, who runs this program, to reallocate money from grantees who have not used it to grantees that have used the money and need more money. And there are a good number of grantees out there who have not been able to spend down their money. And what Treasury has said is they've sent benchmarks and required localities who have met the benchmarks to put in performance improvement plans. They're actually due today. And for those localities who think they can spend their money, they'll have to come up with a plan that will be approved by Treasury, and there'll be check-ins every 60 days. But there may be some localities who don't even put in those programs because they haven't even gotten through 10% of their first allocation. There were two allocations, and we've allocated all of it. But there are some places in the country where they have not been able to get out 10% of their first allocation. And they're either going to put in performance improvement plans, or they may just agree that the money should go back to Treasury to be reallocated. So I think New York is in a very good position to get more money. I think we need more money than we've asked for. We've asked for about $1 billion more dollars. A recent report from the National Low Income Housing Coalition suggested that even with our program working well, we've managed to reach a very small percentage of low-income tenants who are rent burdened. And that's just because we have higher rents than other places in the country, and we got less money than we should have. We did not get our fair share. And it would not surprise me if there are hundreds of thousands of tenants who still don't know about the program and are still unable to pay their rents. And I think that we need more than $1 billion, maybe $2 or $3 more billion, to pay off all the rent arrears that came because of COVID.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Ellen Davidson. She's a staff attorney with the Legal Aid Society. Ellen, as always, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.